This is DomesticPreparedness.com. Since 1998, Domestic Preparedness has been a source of solutions for the professional preparedness community. Your host today is the managing editor, John Morton.
This podcast interview is sponsored by TBI Corporation. Mobility, Protection, Response. TBI Corporation is the manufacturer of rapid deploy shelter systems, solutions for decontamination, isolation infection control, surge capacity, plus command control. For more information, visit www.tbicorp.com.
Domestic Preparedness is with Captain Mike Anderson of the U.S. Public Health Service, who is the National Program Manager for the Metropolitan Medical Response System. The MMRS develops and enhances existing emergency preparedness systems to respond effectively to a mass casualty event. The system prepares and coordinates local law enforcement, fire, hazmat, EMS, hospital, public health, and other first response personnel in the planning and use of local resources to respond more effectively in the early hours of a crisis until external assistance arrives and is operational. Now, last February, we were with Mike's predecessor, Dennis Atwood, so we thought after a year it was time to return for a status report. I should say that Captain Anderson wears another hat here at DHS. He is also the Senior Advisor for Public Health and Emergency Preparedness in the Office of Grants and Training here at the Preparedness Directorate. I met Mike some years ago when I hosted a number of bioterrorism consequence management conferences here in Washington. So, Mike, it's great to be with you again, and I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, let's start with an overview of the MMRS today. Most of our Dom Prep members are familiar with the program, but some may not be, and others may need an update on where you are now. If you would, give us the MMRS 101.
Okay, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to do that. As you know, because you and I go back a number of years, the MMRS, the aegis of the MMRS was back in March of 1995 when we found the Shinrikyo sarin gas event in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And then subsequent to that in April, there was the bombing in Oklahoma. So immediately after that, or I can't say immediately, March, April, in May of 1995, the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments wrote a letter to the White House and articulated their concerns of not being able to respond to an event of a similar nature to the sarin gas attack in Tokyo. That letter went through the typical White House mm-hmm. to the eventual secretary who got the rose pinned on him. So that letter was turned over to Donna Shalala, who in turn looked around HHS and found the Office of Emergency Preparedness, where Admiral Frank Young was in charge at that point in time, and passed the letter to Frank to respond to. Frank Young and his deputy, Bill Clark, subsequently met with the Washington Metropolitan Council of Governments folks. So working through the auspices of the Arlington County Fire Department, HHS and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments in Arlington County developed the prototype Metropolitan Medical Strike Team. And so that was the birth of the MMRS program. After the development in Arlington County, we were faced with the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, and worked with the government in Atlanta and Fulton County and surrounding counties to develop a similar system, a Metropolitan Medical Strike Team system in Atlanta for the for availability during the Olympic period. And as you remember, there was actually an explosion in Olympic Park. And the MMRS mm-hmm. responded to, that was their first MMRS response in the history of our program. The MMRS started out as a response element for chemical events. So in the early years in 1995, 96, 97, as you probably remember, there was a great deal of work done on mass decontamination, both here in Arlington County, in Montgomery County here in Maryland, and a lot of work was done simultaneously in Atlanta and other places around the country. Soon afterwards, President Clinton became interested in biological threats. Since we marched to the tune of the White House, the MMRS quickly added biological response capabilities to their portfolio. So initially we're chemical, then biological. And then subsequent to that, there were radiological and nuclear concerns. And so we asked in the early days, we asked jurisdictions for a chemical response plan, a biological response plan, and a nuke rad response plan. And over the years, it became part of law in when HSPD 8, Homeland Security Presidential Directive 8, talks about an all-hazards plan. So MMRS actually started moving in the direction of an all-hazards approach prior to HSPD-8, but it was codified by HSPD-8, and that's pretty much where we are today.
Well, now in January, the National Program Office moved from the Office of Domestic Preparedness, or ODP, to the Office of Grants and Training. Now, does this move have any implications for the state and local folks?
It does, in fact, and I see it as a plus, as a matter of fact. The MMRS funding, as you well know, has been in a sustainment mode over the last 3, 4, 5 years. So the amount of money that is available to jurisdictions has generally been less than $300,000 per year. A lot of money to me personally, but not a lot of money to the 124 largest jurisdictions in the United States. So the move for MMRS into the Office of Grants and Training actually makes it possible for MMRS grant recipients to become engaged with the folks that are directing the Homeland Security Grant Program funds at the state level and the Urban Area Security Initiative funds at the local level. And in many jurisdictions, the public health and medical initiatives are funded into the millions of dollars for initiatives vice $300,000 or less. So it's been a very good move for the program in general. And I'm not sure if you are aware, but we're going to move once again to the Federal Emergency Management Agency as of, I believe, Monday, April the 1st. We will migrate once again. So this we've been on the MMRS program has been nomadic over the years, but it has survived.
Now, with that soon-to-come move into FEMA, what will that say in terms of incident management? I mean, there's an alignment there, I guess, in terms of philosophy.
Exactly, John, and I'm looking forward to the move based on the fact that FEMA at the federal level is the integrator and coordinator for federal incident management, and that's exactly what MMRS has been for ever since it was birthed in 1995-1996. The MMRS program at the local level is the integrator and coordinator for medical incident management. So there's definitely a fit there that I think will be of benefit to us in the future.
Well, that brings to mind integrated regional response. How is MMRS paralleling the DHS drive towards developing that sort of integrated regional response capability?
Actually, the federal fiscal year 07 capability focus areas specifically speak to regional collaboration in an effort to share, vice, duplicate resources. And this all comes back to HSPD8 and a national preparedness goal.
Mm-hmm.
So the MMRS program is right on target with moving in that direction.
Let's look a little bit on the question of pandemic preparedness. What has MMRS been doing generally in that area?
Well, since we know that the localities in local jurisdictions in a pandemic are going to be largely on their own, and they've heard that from Secretary Leavitt and senior DHS officials when over the last year during a campaign to visit all 56 states and territories,
mm-hmm.
To talk about pandemic influenza planning and what have you. So it's no secret to local jurisdictions that there won't be a cavalry coming,
mm-hmm.
as they're used to for hurricanes and floods and other events, because by definition, a pandemic means everybody is going to be in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
The MMRS preparedness for pandemics, as you know, that early in the program, the jurisdictions were required to provide a medical cache for local first responders, and they're continuing under that aegis, and now they're moving to purchase antivirals, and actually some jurisdictions are moving to make purchases for equipment and supplies that one would need for alternate care facilities and, mm-hmm. and sheltering in an environment of a pandemic.
Well, now, pandemic planning at the local level would involve liaison with the Citizen Corps. Can you tell us a little bit about the interface there?
John, I'm glad you asked that question, because it's been my thought over the last year and a half or 2 years that I've been involved in pandemic influenza planning that, as you know, local jurisdictions across the country are facing a shortage of medical professionals, particularly nurses, but in some cases physicians and other ancillary medical personnel. And so there are not going to be nurses that are going to be able to come from other jurisdictions,
mm-hmm.
to your jurisdiction if in fact we're in a pandemic. So the answer, as far as I'm concerned, for things such as medical surge,
mm-hmm.
and mass prophylaxis is clearly that trained citizens, non-clinical folks without licenses and what have you, are clearly the answer to that. They're the, mm-hmm. In fact, they're the only answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we can take smart people who can follow directions, who can be trained, and have them become hands,
yeah.
a pair of hands, in essence, mm-hmm. for doctors and nurses to get us through this thing. And in fact, a lot of folks are recommending now is that we're going to see a lot of home care,
mm-hmm.
as we did when you and I were children. When I got sick, my mom took care of me. She didn't take me to the emergency room. So I think we're going to have to go back in that mm-hmm. direction to survive a pandemic in this country.
In this segment, let's go back to more discussion on HSPD-8 and capabilities. First, Mike, is there anything new that the MMRS grants require of jurisdictions in light of that regard?
Well, as you know, HSPD-8 talks about national preparedness goals. It also talks about a subset of the work that was done on under HSPD-8 was the development of target capabilities, of which there are 37 that are essentially completed, and there are another set of, I believe, 34 that are under development. But there actually are defined target capabilities at the national level, and MMRS program guidance and jurisdictional capabilities are directly related to and supportive of 5 of the 8 national priorities. And I'll just elaborate on those real quickly. Expanded regional collaboration is one that we talked about already. Strengthening information sharing and collaboration capabilities. Strengthening interoperable communications capabilities, and we'll discuss that further later on. strengthening CBRNE detection response and decontamination capabilities, and that goes back to our major strength that we developed in the early years of the program, and again, strengthening medical surgeon mass prophylaxis capabilities. And on that last one, there you can see the connection with our Citizen Corps programs, and actually there's another program, the Medical Reserve Corps program over at HHS that fits real nicely into that tent that I always think of MMRS as being a tent at the local level for medical planning and operations and incident management. And within that tent is law enforcement, fire, police, EMS, Citizen Corps, Medical Reserve Corps. That entire group has to be in that tent working together to get things done, because all of those particular folks that I articulated as being in that tent don't have in and of themselves enough funding to get the job done. So it requires integration and coordination, and MMRS is the program, the only program that I'm aware of that provides that at the local level. Mm-hmm.
Well, what exactly do you look for when you're looking at MMRS capability?
What we look for now is basically the key for an MMRS program is an active steering committee, and that's always been the hallmark of the MMRS program. And what we're doing now is helping our jurisdictions to understand that the makeup of that steering committee has to be those persons that the emergency manager at the local jurisdictional level is going to look to surround him or her and provide medical incident management during an event in their jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So the people that absolutely have to be at the table for the MMRS response and for incident management for ESF-8 are obviously public health, hospitals, EMS, police and fire, the coroner for mass fatality management. And then you can expand that core group as needed, but those are the key individuals that absolutely have to be at the table. And those are the same individuals that, as you and I both know, that the emergency manager is going to want to have surrounding him or her to operationalize and to manage an incident at the local jurisdictional level.
Mike, that calls to mind maybe you have some thoughts on some very stellar steering committees that are active. And if you do, how is it that you measure success with those examples?
What we look at are two different bodies of work. In the Incident Institute of Medicine study that was contracted actually by HHS several years ago to look at Metropolitan Medical Response Systems and actually developed a measuring tool for us. We use that as our standard, but what we're moving more in the direction of using are the target capabilities that have been developed under the Homeland Security Presidential Decision 8 and the National Preparedness Goal, because the TCLs were created by federal and local and state interagency and private sector folks. So they've been it's a body of knowledge that is quite large, but it's also very useful for actually getting down into the weeds on how prepared a jurisdiction can be and or should be.
Now, if you apply that metric, where are some of your great examples in the case of your active steering committees?
Okay. I'm glad you asked that. We do have some stars that we like to talk about, and Los Angeles and a number of the MMRS jurisdictions in California who learned early on and actually began to regionalize years before the Department of Homeland Security even came into existence. There's a large group of MMRS programs in the state of Ohio who actually did the same thing. They looked around and realized that working together made a lot more sense than everybody trying to do the same thing at the local jurisdictional level. Same thing happened in Texas, and those I guess it's because of the mass of jurisdictions in Ohio and Texas and California. They've done an excellent job. Other stars that I look to are Boston, Arlington County, Virginia, Hampton Roads, Virginia, and the Northern New England Consortium have done excellent work, and I hold them as examples of how to do it correctly. Mm-hmm. And actually, the folks in Los Angeles and Boston and those jurisdictions have done a lot of outreach to mm-hmm. other jurisdictions to kind of help them get the message.
Now, that's great. Now, in the case of the HRSA benchmarking hospitals, that's changing with HSPD 8. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what the tiering means for the MMRS system?
Actually, that's a good question, but the HRSA tiering, as you just articulated, is exactly for what you just said. It's a hospital tiering mechanism. It does help MMRS to the extent that what the HRSA appears to be going back and doing is they've realized that in a jurisdiction, in a large jurisdiction where you can have 40 or 50 or 60 hospitals, we all know that not all hospitals are equal, and that the more than likely the lead for planning in a local jurisdiction is going to be the university-type major research medical centers, the Georgetowns, mm-hmm. the George Washington Universities, the Boston has the Massachusetts Mass General, and the large hospitals like that are now being looked to provide leadership under the HRSA benchmarking mm-hmm. and the tiering program that they have over there. So it works well for MMRS. And again, when we talk about having public health and hospitals at the table for planning, and you can't have 70 hospitals at the table, in like, for instance, like in New York City, for planning, you have mm-hmm. to have a smaller subset that kind of mm-hmm. leads the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that provides some clarification for that.
In this segment, let's talk about how the local jurisdictions have structured their teams. Now, as you've emphasized previously, the steering committee is the key partner here, right?
Exactly. Again, what we find is that there has to be a core steering committee from which you can reach out and build, and you can have an enormous steering committee if you so choose.
Mm-hmm.
But we believe, and through history and working closely with emergency management folks and taking a close look at who emergency managers feel comfortable with managing their ESF 8 activities in an emergency operations center during an event, that the core steering committee must be composed of the emergency manager, hospital representation, and again, in a major jurisdiction, we're going to be looking to the Tier 1 hospitals mm-hmm. that HRSA describes,
mm-hmm.
public health officials, law enforcement, fire, EMS, and mm-hmm. the coroner. Beyond that, the steering committee can expand or contract as the event mm-hmm. determines.
Now, what kind of federal support do you provide, and what provision do you have for lessons learned and best practices for the steering committees?
Well, that's part of the move to become part of the Office of Grants and Training has been very helpful. We have a lessons learned website, actually, LLIS, that is available to the MMRS community. We have an MMRS website, www.mmrs.fema.gov. We operate and maintain a listserv that allows us to communicate to all of our MMRS jurisdictions and allows them the ability to query us if they need to. And then we have several levels of technical assistance that we can provide through our preparedness officers, our state preparedness officers, our regional preparedness officers, and those of us here in the National Program Office.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the typical MMRS development plan? Let's start with the baseline for the primary and component plans and the plans related to jurisdictions, particular vulnerability assessments and critical infrastructure and the like.
The MMRS baseline capabilities, to go back, are we initially asked them for plans for a chemical event, biological, radiological, nuclear, or explosive. Then we, because of the way, actually because of Hurricane Katrina, but actually years prior to that even, one of the baseline capabilities was a requirement for plans to include forward movement of patients utilizing the NDMS system. Mm-hmm. Plans for a strike team and operational response element remain legitimate and they're optional. Plans to enhance local hospital and healthcare system preparedness, and that subsequently has been picked up by HRSA. Pharmaceutical and equipment plans are part of the baseline capabilities. And training plans are part of the baseline capabilities. So those have been out there for some time.
You mentioned equipment. Let's look at that a little bit. How do you have your jurisdictions harmonize their equipment purchases with the other federal programs when they acquire things like the pharmaceuticals and the personal protective equipment and detection and monitoring gear? Do they rely a lot on the AAL, right?
They rely for specific purchases. They rely not a lot, but they rely entirely on the AAL. Mm-hmm. The AEL, however, does remain a fluid document, and we have had instances where jurisdictions have made requests to purchase particular medically related items and that weren't on the AEL, and it was not a problem getting them added to it. Mm-hmm. What we've done since MMRS funding has basically been in a sustainment mode over the last several years, what we encourage our jurisdictions to do is again, like I alluded to before, we look for MMRS to be the integrator and coordinator for public health and medical initiatives at the local jurisdictional level. So we encourage our jurisdictions to use MMRS funding for integration and coordination activities for convening the larger public health and medical community. And we encourage that community in a united fashion to engage with the Homeland Security, the larger Homeland Security grant program at the state level, mm-hmm. and the larger Urban Area Security Initiative grants at the local jurisdictional level. And mm-hmm. in fact, there are successful the initiatives that folks from MMRS and HRSA and, mm-hmm. and the City's Readiness Initiative have brought to Homeland Security Grant Program officials and Urban Area Security Initiative officials and have gotten funding at very mm-hmm. significant levels.
So if I understand you correctly, you're recommending the MMRS systems to spend their funds more in the area of systems or programs that are facilitating integration and coordination.
Absolutely, because that's the bailiwick, and in fact that's the hallmark of the MMRS program at the local jurisdictional level, is the ability to integrate and coordinate and convene.
Well, in this segment, let's look a little bit more deeply into integration issues for the MMRS. In December, we had the results of the National Baseline Survey on Interoperable Communications. What did the MMRS report in this regard?
What we find in our jurisdictions, unfortunately, is that the public health and medical community, the hospital community, is just now beginning to understand that they need to be at the table and an integral part in the discussions with the larger community regarding interoperable communications. It started out initially the interoperable communications funding was directed primarily at law enforcement and fire, and the health and medical community was a little bit late getting to the table, but they're becoming engaged in a more holistic manner at the local jurisdictional level.
Is there anything you might want to remind the local jurisdictions on interoperable comms, other than just making sure that you have a seat at the table?
I think that's the most important piece, is that, in fact, they need to have a seat at the table, and they need to educate the larger community, the law enforcement and fire portion of the community, about the absolute requirements that that hospitals in the jurisdictions are part of that communication capability, and public health departments in the larger jurisdictions need to be part of that capability.
In our last section here, I want to talk a little bit about NIMS. The DHS NIMS Integration Center in September released its NIMS implementation activities that applied to hospitals and healthcare systems. Now, are the MMRS operational concepts fully NIMS compatible? And if not, what are some of the still to be resolved issues?
Actually, MMRS concepts are fully NIMS compatible, because basically, what you know, John, what we're talking about with NIMS is who's in charge, knowing who's in charge, and planning, training, and organizing, and with that framework. And MMRS has always worked in that manner. As I was saying, John, I don't think NIMS is a new thought. I think it's just an elaboration of what in the old days we referred to as incident command. And MMRS has always been an advocate for the medical incident management portion of the overall incident command at the local jurisdictional level.
Now, the information on the NIMS compliances is all available on NIMCAST, right?
Exactly.
Mike, before we leave, let me leave you with one question, and perhaps you can give us an answer on it. Your thoughts as a man of great experience on medical incident management. Tell us, how you see that moving and what we need to bear in mind for the folks at the local level and the state.
Well, John, I'm glad you asked that question, because what we are proponents of here at the National Program Office for the Metropolitan Medical Response System Program is the concept of the Metropolitan Medical Response System at the local jurisdictional level being, in essence, the tent that brings together public health, law enforcement, hospital representation, emergency management, fire, EMS, and the coroner under the aegis of the MMRS Core Steering Committee. And it does two things. Under pre-event, that steering committee and that active group is constantly involved in awareness, prevention, and preparedness. They're involved in integrated, coordinated medical response planning, training, and exercising. And all of this needs to be based on the local jurisdiction's threat and risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Post-event, what we hope and advocate that these people can do in the response and recovery phase is provide integrated, coordinated, immediate initial response operations that have to be sustained at the local level for 24, 48, 72, as long as 96 hours. In some cases, we believe before the federal cavalry comes over the hill, so to speak. We look for them to staff the health and medical section of the local emergency operations center, and we look for to that particular group, inclusive of, and they need to be inclusive of Citizen Corps folks, of the Medical Reserve Corps folks. They need to, the HRSA component needs to be a part of this in the tent. The CRI component from CDC all need to be in that tent. And we look for those folks as a group to provide integrated, coordinated health and medical incident management during an event.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, this has been great, most informative. I hope we can check in with you again, and I want to thank you for your time and for your service to our country.
Thank you.
This has been a Domestic Preparedness podcast interview. Thank you for listening.